Hi, episode 75. Mark DeLuzio here to talk about this episode. We're going to talk about, are you set up to win? Find out here. That's the name of the episode. Why am I doing this? This particular episode is about the constant lean efforts that I see that are simply not set up to win. The framework is wrong or missing altogether. And I want to talk about the framework. And I want you to, listen to this, compare this against your particular lean situation and see whether or not how you guys match up. How do you match up to what I think is a successful lean framework? Or put it this way, things that have to be in place in order for you to win, okay? Because I think, as you probably know, and you've heard me say this before, so many frameworks, or so many lean transformations, simply fail. They die on the vine. I hear all the time companies have just laid off the entire lean department, and what have you, right? So let's talk about this. Now, let me tell you what I'm not going to talk about. I'm not going to talk about leadership. Enough has been said about leadership. I have a couple episodes on it. I think leadership in general is talked about. I think we all know that leaders have to be involved and all the other things. So I'm going to stay away from leadership here right now because I want to talk more about the structure that does have to do with leadership, because these are the people that do have to establish the environment, the culture, the framework in order for a lean transformation to win. Okay. So let me start with just talking, first of all, about a warning sign to look after. If your leadership, yeah, so I'm not going to talk about leadership, but if your company, I should say, refers to your lean transformation as a program, you've got to nip that in the bud like right away. Because to me, a program might be, hey, we're implementing a new ERP system, or we're putting in a new supply chain process. That's a program. And to me, a program has a beginning and it has an end. So if you're really truly doing lean, it never has an end, because what we're trying to do is pursue perfection that arguably we all know we're never going to hit. But we're trying to find the one best way to conduct business to satisfy all our stakeholders, be it employees, customers, shareholders, the environment, the community, regulatory agencies, whoever your stakeholders are, okay? You're trying to satisfy your stakeholders so everybody wins. And one can't win at the expense of other. I talk about that with the Lean Trilogy. It's another episode somewhere in the back. This is episode 75, so we've done a lot of episodes so far. Sometimes I can't even remember the things I've talked about. But anyway, we look at these concepts that we call it a program, and right there, that mindset's got to change. It's subtle. I know it's subtle. I know it's, you probably said, Mark, it's not that big of a deal, right? It is a really big deal when you think about this as a program, okay? Because programs could be taken right out of the picture and removed if they're not working, all right? So this has to be an overarching framework for the enterprise. It has to be a cultural transformation, more so than nuts and bolts on the shop floor or in your office, although that's important too, right? Because you have to have tangible evidence that you're actually changing things. So first thing I think about, it's a mindset issue in terms of framework. If it's called a program, you got to challenge that and get that understanding going. Now, a lot of the framework has to do with the lean office. And the lean office, be it at the corporate level, be it at the divisional level, whatever the case may be. And there's a lot of different ways to set up your lean office, if you will, and all kinds of things. That's not what this podcast is about. I am talking about that on other episodes, but right now that's not what I'm talking about. What I am talking about is this. Here's some of the problems that I see with lean offices, okay? First of all, they're not structured properly. And that could mean anywhere from the people that we put in these offices to the fact that they're drastically under-resourced, okay? I can't mention the name, but there's a big private equity company that hired somebody with a pretty good lean background. And the leaders of this private equity company put this guy in place. And I said, hey, he's got a good lean background. We know lean can give us all kinds of benefits and blah, 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 and EBITDA, EBITDA, EBITDA. That's the, you know, every other sentence has the word EBITDA in it when you talk to private equity. And that's a lagging indicator, by the way. That's an end result. Okay. But they hired this guy and they checked the box. Hey, we got lean. We got lean because we hired this guy and he's going to go do lean. The president's. Not even, as a matter of fact, one of the divisions I was working with this particular company, the president was located in another country, didn't even visit the facility, didn't want to take part of the boot camp, just thought that, hey, he's got his EBITDA covered now because he got his lean guy in place, right? And drastically under-resourced, okay, number one. As a matter of fact, when you see something like that, that lean, so lean practitioner that's in these positions becomes more of a administrator for hiring other consultants. Okay, we're going to hire this consultant and that consultant to do this and do that because they simply don't have the resources to do it. So what do they become? They become a great administrator, but they're not really doing lean. Okay, they're overseeing all the admin associated with that, with schedules and things like that, right? So that's a big deal when you're understaffing the lean office. And I have a lot of discussions on other episodes about what the lean office should do, how you should move people through it, how you develop people, blah, 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 blah. But we'll stop there, okay? The structure is usually wrong. And usually what's wrong, you got the wrong people in it. And I'm not saying it about this particular individual, okay? This guy was a pretty good guy, good background, good experience. But it's usually the wrong people in there. Okay, let's put an engineer in there to run a transformation that's whacked in a few Kaizens. Sorry, that's not going to work. If the engineer is not ensconced with business acumen, they can't talk strategy, can't talk finance, can't understand a basic P&L and balance sheet, doesn't understand market share, doesn't understand the commercial side of the business. Yeah, they may understand how the widget gets technically put together. And that is almost like the last thing you need to know, believe it or not. Okay. It's all about how you get people, how you train them, how you get them to think about problem solving, how the product goes together and what the specifications are is, believe it or not, not even that important. Okay. I'm not saying it's not that important, but if that's your criteria for picking somebody for a lean office, right there, you're shooting yourself in the foot, okay? So that's one. Now, are the lean people in your organization at the right level in the organization? Many times you see them down four levels in the organization, but you're expecting them to move mountains. You expect them to influence people. First of all, the people that are in those roles probably don't have the acumen or the background to influence anybody at a higher level. Secondly, you've got that person so far down in the office, in the organization structure, they're just not set up to win, okay? And you say to somebody four levels down, how come you get this president over in England to do lean? They don't report to me, okay? My God. You know, how am I supposed to do that? I'm four levels down the road. He doesn't even know who I am. Okay. So you see that going on a lot. The other thing is that the people we put in these lean offices, we always would give them something else to do besides lean. And that's a kiss of death. If you're in a lean office and you're in charge of your lean, you know, transformation, which you shouldn't be in charge of it, your CEO should be in charge of it. but I guess I said I wasn't going to talk about leadership. When you combine a staff position and a line position in any lean role, the line position is always going to consume 90%, if not more, of your time. And let me give you a real example. At one of our companies in Danaher, we had somebody who was in charge of the big lean for the big, a very big factory of ours, very strategic factory. And she was the head of DBS, the Danaher Business System, for that facility. But she also was the quality manager and director and the engineering director. Guess what? She hardly ever worked on DBS. She was firefighting the projects of the day, the fire of the day, consumed all of her time, and she never was able to work on building something. She kept working. She worked on working in the business, not on the business. Okay. So I am adamant that any person in a lean role should not have another role. Hey, I'm going to run purchasing, and I'm also going to do lean. Dumb. It's dumb, and I've never seen it work, because the line role is always going to consume the staff role, the lean role, okay? Let's not remember what staff is all about. Go back to the Bible. Staff is that stick that the shepherds leaned on to give them support, okay? So staff is a support position. It's an enabling position. But once you combine that with a line role, be it engineering, purchasing, anything else for that matter, finance, it doesn't matter. It's going to suck you in and you will not be successful. Okay. So think about that. That's a big failure point I see in the framework of how you set this up. Okay. Next, the lean office. They're in charge of doing projects. So they're going to go lead the project over in the Kansas City facility to get the lead time down. Or they're going to go over to Singapore and work on their quality. They got a big quality problem. I don't have a problem working on initiatives like that. But the primary goal of working on these initiatives should be to develop other people. Period. The lean office, I don't care at what level, should be to develop capabilities within the organization. Primarily problem-solving capabilities. Oh, yeah, all the other lean tools too, right? But we want to develop. That's how you have to spread this out with your organization. If you're only relying on one person to do all the work and have all the lean knowledge, you're going to fail, all right? And if their whole sole job is to go in and get and put, like some people I've heard say, put points on the board, that's a kiss of death. In the almost 10 years I worked for George Sherman, our CEO of Danaher, God rest his soul, he was phenomenal. And also with Larry Culp, who I worked for 10 years and for a year, they never asked me once, how much money did the DBS office save? What kind of points on the board did we put up? They never asked me that once. Because they knew that the responsibility for results was resting with the operating units, not with the DBS office. Okay, so that's a really important thing. So if your leadership is asking you for, give me a scorecard, show me how you justified your position. That question drives me nuts, because nobody else in the company gets asked that. And I recommend to those who get approached by chief financial officers, where they come in and say, well, show me how you justified your office, your lean office. My response would be, and I'm an ex-CFO, by the way, so, well, look, I'm not really sure how to do that. I'm sure you have a template or some kind of process to calculate that. Why don't you show me how you justified your financial analysts and your accountants and your FP&A people and all that? Why don't you show me how you justified them? And then maybe I could take that model and apply it to my part of the universe, okay? It's nuts. It's nuts. And so combining the position with a line position and also continue asking you for ROI results return on investment results is an indication that somebody's not buying into what you're doing. They're not buying into lean. They're not buying into the philosophy. They don't understand. Okay. And that's a red flag. And I know it's easier said than done, right? Now, you should be held accountable for how many capabilities are you developing? And I don't mean going out and counting Kaizens and stuff like that. But are we really building capabilities? Not only lean knowledge, which is explicit, but the tacit knowledge, which is the hands-on implementation. I could train you within like 20, 30 minutes all about tack time. I have an episode on tack time. How you use tack time, for example, to drive, you know, value is a whole nother endeavor. How do you use it? How do you do it with capital? How do you do it with people, with inventory? Okay. How it ties, it's one of the three components of standard work. So how to do it, the hands-on, is really what the lean office needs to transmit as their, if you want to call it, their product. But think about it. That goes back to what I said earlier. You've got to have the right people with the knowledge and know-how and tacit knowledge and hands-on to be able to do that. Okay? It's a real big deal. So if you put somebody into that doesn't have the experience of driving a transformation, somebody that doesn't have the experience of strategy deployment and how that cascades and how that works and what the right thinking on that is, you're going to struggle. Okay, you're going to struggle. So be careful there. Now, so talking about transferring capabilities, one thing I've noticed is that in the lean office, if you were to ask all the executives on the C-suite, what's the purpose of the lean office? Most of them would probably say to put points on the board, to get results, to, you know, to drive productivity, to drive costs, to drive lead time and all that. Very rarely somebody will say, oh, their job is to develop capabilities within the organization and actually develop future leaders that are ensconced with our operating system and our way of thinking. Okay. You won't get that answer very often. All right. So it's really important to make sure the purpose of the lean office is understood and bought into by everybody on the at least on the C-suite. Obviously, it's got to be more than that. But if the C-suite's not on the same page, again, it's like spitting in the wind. Okay. It's not going to work. So that purpose has to be laid out in writing and discussed and understood. And the way to do it is to say, hey, I need your input on this. What do you guys think? Instead of going in and saying, here's the purpose, let me tell you what our purpose is in my lean office. Okay, right there, you're going to get reaction. It could be the cure for cancer, and it's not going to matter. You're going to get rejected with that approach. Make your lean office, make the executive C-suite an extension of your lean office, and tell them that. I want you to be an extension. I want you to be my thought partners in this. That's how you get buy-in. Okay. All right. I have a whole episode, and I'm not going to go through this in detail, but when this lean office usually doesn't know what to do, so what they do is they do audits. Most of the time when I see lean offices that go out and do all these factory audits or business audits or whatever the hell they are, okay, it's an indication that the people in that office don't know what to do and they're inexperienced. Audits are a kiss of death. Lean audits are a kiss of death. And most of them are based on how you're doing on tools. Okay. I gave the example. I had a house built and they were experts at saws and hammers and all the other tools that go into building a house. A plus all the way across. But my roof and basement leaked. Okay. So great. I was great at the tools, except for the fact that I didn't figure out how to really solve problems with those tools, right? I was able to execute those tools fine, but my house had all kinds of problems, electrical, water, all kinds of things. Okay, so I talk in depth. That's episode 48, by the way, if you want to go listen to that one. Stay away from these damn lean audits. They're a waste of time. Okay. And I'd rather have you working on teaching people how to solve problems than lead audits. But I have a whole episode on this, so go listen to it. It's another kiss of death in terms of a framework of setting up the lean office. Okay, now let's move away from the lean office. I can say more about that, but I won't right now. I'll give you enough. The other one is, are we set up to win from a problem-solving framework? Of all the years, I'm going on four decades now, and let's see, and next year will be four decades of me doing lean full-time, okay? And I've been on six continents, over 50 countries. I've seen so many different industries, and everything starts looking the same after a while because you see the same patterns all the way through. So that's what I'm talking about here, is the patterns that I see. And one of them I see is that you'll get everybody in the company, especially at the C-suite, agreeing that, yeah, we need to solve problems at the lowest possible level in the organization, and we need to engage and empower our people. And so you talk about it, you put up a few posters, you may make a couple presentations, but that's all you do. And you didn't set up the framework to win in terms of problem solving. And in the final analysis, I've come to realize that lean is all about problem solving, not fixing. I didn't say problem fixing. I said problem solving. Okay. That's what it's about. Yeah, we're going to invoke all the tools necessary to help us solve problems. But quite frankly, that's what lean's about, problem solving. So we say all these things. We all say, hey, look, we're going to go out and we're going to empower our workforce and all this great stuff, but we don't change anything. And what am I talking about here in terms of framework? First of all, do we have people who are skilled in problem solving that could teach other people how to fish? Okay, and solve real problems. Problem solving is not easy. I've done 9 episodes so far in my 75 episodes strictly on problem solving and the problems I see with problem solving. And probably interwoven into all kinds of other episodes is the subject of problem solving, okay? So if we don't know how to problem solve, you have to set up the framework. So what does this framework look like? First of all, do we have people who can actually train others how to fish in the context of a real hands-on Kaizen? I'm not talking about doing a bunch of lean by PowerPoint like a lot of big consulting companies done. They go and they teach it, then they walk away because they don't know how to do it either, okay? But seeing is believing, right? Working on real live problems to train others how to do this. Do we have the training materials to do it? Okay, or is everybody using a different version? I had one client that was using an A3 in one part of the business and an 8D in another part of the business. And this guy had some other kind of Six Sigma approach. And this guy had this. And they're all disjointed. All disjointed. Okay. Do we have a problem-solving approach that we all can agree to that we can all teach? Especially in those companies that have interdivisional type organizations where, you know, I'm working in Division A and I got promoted and I got sent over to Division B. All of a sudden, there's a whole new problem-solving mantra I have to learn, new language, new lexicon, and all that. Just all that does is just stymie you, okay? Stymie you. If you had one problem-solving process, okay, albeit it may not be perfect, but now I got one standard to change if I'm going to improve it. I don't have to worry about what Charlie's doing over there and what Mary's doing in that division. Okay, so do we have the training materials and the approach to problem solving? Are we affording people the time to do problem solving? There's one big defense contractor in one of their divisions. They said, yeah, we're going to give our people between 1 and 3 on Wednesday afternoon to do Kaizen. That was a commitment to time. Why? Because they're so backed up with past due products, mostly due to design quality, and there was an incredible amount of rework. They were past due with their orders. They were losing customers, okay? That it's almost like, well, we don't have time to improve. So we're going to give them between 1 and 2, 1 and 3 on Wednesday afternoon to do Kaizen. Well, good luck with that, okay? Good luck with that. And I guess that gives you the illusion of doing lean. So you can say you're doing it, right? The same company that thought, you know, their cost of poor quality was less than 2% of revenue. Yeah, right. It was probably more like 30% of revenue, right? If you really understood what the cost of poor quality was. So are we allowing time and are we giving them the resources, whether it be, you know, the trainers, the facilitators, teaching the scientific method, the engineering, tool room, maintenance, IT? Are we giving them the resources that are needed to enact change? This whole notion that, yeah, our operators are going to solve all our problems. No, they're not. Matter of fact, they may not have the capabilities or the bandwidth or the resources or experience to do it. But they're invaluable parts of the problem-solving process to let you know exactly what's going on because they do the work. Who knows the work better than them? Okay? But if you think you could just dump problem-solving on the bottom line, on the front line of your organization, you must be smoking something because that doesn't work and it's not going to work. Okay. So training, time, resources. I'll tell you a couple stories. One story. I told you about this defense contractor. Between 1 and 3 on Wednesday, and these leaders actually thought that was going to work. And the funny thing about this particular company is that they end up laying off most of their lean staff, saying they're not being effective. But they got to keep their jobs. There I go. I'm talking about leadership again, aren't I? Okay, I do have an episode on that. I think it's called Destructive Lean Leadership, somewhere way back in the annals of this podcast. So you can go check that one out, okay? But they get to keep their jobs just to do the same thing over and over again, okay? So, but let me tell you a personal story about Hino Motors. Hino Motors is the big truck builder in Japan for Toyota. And I was running the operations at Jake Brake and supplying brakes to Hino Motors, okay? And we were a UAW, Jake Brake was a UAW shop in High Cost, Connecticut. And we actually turned that business into one of the more profitable businesses in Danaher, okay? With a high cost union shop. And at Hino Motors, let's just say at Jake Brake, we instituted a suggestion system. We call it the JIS, the Jacobs Improvement System. And what it was operators could, you know, fill out a little form. They could sign it if they want. They don't have to sign it. Most of them did, and put it in the suggestion box. And then we sort through these suggestions every month, and we come up with a 2 or 3 top suggestions. We gave them, I think, a certificate of stock. And that was a big deal for them to get a stock certificate rather than a T-shirt. It meant more to them. But anyway, we got some pretty good participation. So as we kicked this thing off, we were tracking 2 suggestions per month per employee. Okay. And we had about 500, you know, hourly people. So, you know, we were getting 1,000 a month, basically. Now, I'm sure they didn't all come 2 per person, right? But we are tracking 2 per month, and we felt pretty good about that, right? One of my first visits to Hino Motors over in Hino, Japan, I'm walking around the factory, and they had a chart on the wall, and I asked what it was, and they said, that's our suggestions per employee, and they were up around 9, 9.5 suggestions per employee. And I was blown away. I said, oh, my God, I mean, we're at 2, and we think we're good, right? They're at 9. And so what happened was as I got talking more and have them translate the chart because it was in, you know, kanji characters, I learned that it wasn't just suggestions. It was implemented suggestions. They were tracking 9 implemented suggestions per month. And I asked them how they did that. Well, on Friday afternoon, they allowed, and this is separate from Kaizen, by the way, okay? On Friday afternoon, they shut down at noon, and they took that time of Friday afternoon out of the available time for the tack time calculation, okay? And they ended up giving the employees the whole afternoon, maybe even a little earlier than that, like 11 o'clock in the morning, and they were able to work on their particular improvements. And they provided all the resources, be it engineering, maintenance, tool room, you know, IT, whatever, to work on their projects. And these projects could be nothing more like, hey, every 10th part, my part sticks in this fixture and I got to fix that so it doesn't stick anymore. Okay. Those little improvements add up to a big deal. Okay. But they, here it is, they provided the time and they provided the resources. Okay. And I'm not talking about time to do real, you can argue this is Kaizen, sure it is, but they gave them the time to work on their own suggestions. And that was good in a way too, because we got away with, you know, our suggestions sometimes have things like, hey, let's paint the building pink, you know? And we counted that as a suggestion. But if you're gonna write a suggestion knowing that you're gonna be involved in implementing it, you put a little bit more thought into it, okay? So that's what they were tracking. So that was a wake-up call. Nine alone would have been great, but these were nine implemented suggestions per month. And I kind of kicked myself because I failed to ask how many suggestions do they get overall. You know, I didn't ask that question, but I bet you it's probably 20 per employee, okay? And we were at two. And we were thinking we were good. So the value of benchmarking, right? But the point here is they provided the framework to win, okay? You can't just say, well, all of a sudden on Friday, you do a big employee presentation, say, we're going to do continuous improvement and everybody's going to improve and we're going to support you. And then Monday, nothing changes. You're still working 60 hours a week, still doing all the things that, you know, you did the week before, and nothing gets better. So the framework's all screwed up, or missing, I should say. I guess that's a screw up. Okay. The last thing I want to talk about is this whole business about value streams. And I did a whole episode on value streams, okay? We still insist on running our businesses in a functional way, and we give the illusions of having value streams. It's ridiculous. Whether the value streams are based on product family, whether they're based on a market, whether they're based on a customer, if you're an OEM business, there's a lot of different ways to construct your organization into value streams. But most of the time when I see people do a value stream map, it's within the confines of manufacturing, and it has nothing to do with how we're organized, how we're structured, how we're even serving the customer from a multifunctional perspective, okay? It's more about, hey, what items am I going to work on in my manufacturing to get my lead time down? Okay. But as my friend David Thompson talks about over in the UK, you know, he talks about the concept of time and order to cash. How quickly can we convert an order into cash? Doesn't touch any of that. And the people within that value stream are still beholden to their functional leaders, which are usually directors or vice presidents. And ironically, it's the vice presidents of these businesses that have to make the call to dismantle this functional structure and go to true value streams. Think about a value stream as a, you know, a factory within a factory, a company within a company, okay? Those are the people that have to make the call, and they're not going to do it because they don't want to give up their lofty positions and titles, okay? But that's an illusion that you're doing lean, an illusion that you're doing value streams. You're not, okay? And I learned a while ago, and this thought came to me as I was giving a presentation to a chief executive officer and his team of a $2 or $3 billion company. And we started talking about functions, and, you know, I still hear the thing, hey, how come design engineering, how can we get design engineering and manufacturing engineering to work together? How about you just freaking do it? Okay. What do you mean? How do you get to do that? You know? So And by the way, I know it's harder than that. Okay, the question still amazes me. It amazes me that we're still asking these questions so many years later. Same questions we asked back in the 1980s. So I'm standing in front of this group and we're talking about all these different things, and talking about function. And it occurred to me, if you're trying to optimize a function, you will suboptimize the enterprise. There's no question in my mind, if you with blinders on are trying to optimize your finance group, your IT group, your design engineering group, go down the list, your marketing group, your sales group, okay? And I can give you countless examples of efforts to optimize a function that took the company down. Now, let me give you one. A particular client of mine, it was quarter end and all the sales guys needed to make their bonuses. So they went out and discounted the hell out of their product, forced the customers to take product early, okay, which violated the just-in-time principle, by the way, okay. A lot of these things happen to be just violations of fundamental principles. They got their sales bonuses, but operations lost. I mean, operations had to incur all kinds of extra costs, overtime. Okay, I think they got 30% of their orders that particular month in the last 2 days of the month. Wasn't even baked into their sales and operations planning forecast process. They had no visibility and all that. So I said to the CEO and to the head of sales, I said, your sales group won, but your organization lost. Not only did you take a haircut on the discount that you shouldn't have given to entice these guys to take this earlier, because remember, they're being measured on purchase price variance, okay? They're customers. So yeah, sure, yeah, well, we're gonna get my bonus padded too if I buy a bulk of stuff, and they're doing all kinds of dysfunctional things there too, right? But they discount it, then we incur extra costs, so the margin got squeezed on both ends of the equation. Okay, the margin got squeezed, but the sales guys made what they called the President's Club, and they all got cruises and bonuses and all kinds of other things because they did a hell of a job. Now, the next quarter, for the next 2 weeks, there was nothing to do because because customers weren't ordering anymore. I've seen this picture time and time and time again. And that's only one example, by the way, of just doing dumb things that optimize a function, but does not optimize the enterprise. Okay? That's why with strategy deployment, we make sure that every initiative, every breakthrough initiative that we work on is a multifunctional game. And if you go back to problem solving again, most problems cannot be solved within a single function. And most root causes of a problem are not where you found the problem. It's in some other part of the organization, usually upstream. Okay. David Thompson's new book called The Essence, which I just wrote the foreword to. You should get that book. He talks about this. He talks about time. And one of the things you can't get back is time. I haven't figured out how to do it, right? You can recoup a lot of other things, but you can't recoup time. And a lot of the problems that we find we're working on as lean professionals later in the process are really, the root cause really occurs upstream in, for example, design engineering. Okay. As an example, where the design back there, our components had a lot of stack up issues. Okay. So it doesn't pass test stand at the end of the line when it gets to manufacturing, right? That kind of thing, right? So normally the problems that we're working on in a lean environment are the results of something that wasn't addressed from a pure lean and process perspective earlier in the process. And you could probably take every function like that, whether it's how we take a sales order and get the right technical specs from a customer that resonated in bad bill of materials, bad engineering, quality problems, that we have to go back and do rework loops, okay? This whole business about getting it right the first time and passing good product, good designs, good information on to the next person in the process is lost because that's not where we focus. We usually focus on the end of the results, the tail wagging the dog, right? We had the problem over here, so let's go try to fix that problem without really going back upstream like Davey Thompson talks about and address those issues. And a lot of times our compensation systems do not entice us to go that far back in the value stream. So this whole business about value streams and functionality, again, it's really tough to work with in that environment. So if you're trying to optimize something that sits in a suboptimal framework, you will never be great. You will never be great. When you got large corporations with these functional units that supply chain is making a decision on your tooling that you use in manufacturing because all they're looking at is cost. And now you're subject to go to, I don't know, China for your tooling with subpar quality. But the purchasing guys and the finance guys got their number. Now you got to deal with the crap. You have no input to that. This is true stuff. I see this in big companies all the time. The bigger the company, the worse it seems to be. And I'm going to make my decision on your tooling with blinders on from a procurement perspective because I'm only looking at what my boss measures me on. I'm not responsible for on-time delivery of products. I'm not responsible for quality. I'm not responsible for lead time. I'm responsible for getting the lowest cost on tooling. So I'm going to behave accordingly. You know, I'm not a big theory of constraints fan, but Eli Gorat did have something interesting to say. He said, tell me how you're going to measure me, and I will tell you how I'm going to behave. Okay? So that framework is all screwed up. Absolutely screwed up. Okay? So I'm going to close here and go back to the title of this. Are you set up to win? Think about it. I'd love to have you, you know, email me and let me know your stories, okay? I'll keep it confidential, don't worry. but love to hear your stories because I know almost every organization I step into, these issues exist, whether it be with the lean office, whether it be with your problem-solving framework, and, you know, training, materials, time, resources, okay? Are we really teaching people how to fish? Are we still pretending that we're in value streams when we're still being run by functions? And I could have sat here and give you 100 more stories, by the way, on that one, okay? So sometimes we might feel like we're the hamster on the proverbial wheel, working like crazy but not getting anywhere. And that's where I see a lot of lean initiatives fail. And leaders coming back and saying, nah, this stuff doesn't work. I don't know what to do with that. Anyway, I hope this is helpful. I know I'm not providing you answers as to how to address these problems, but I want you first to be, you know, the big part of problem solving is problem awareness. And you may not even have realized that you're not set up to win. And hopefully by listening to this, you could think more clearly about it and maybe do something about it, okay? I'm not one of those guys that are going to sit here and say it's impossible to do. I know it's not because I've done it, okay, successfully, all right? So don't listen to the people out there writing books saying that you can't do this. Don't listen to the people out there saying it's impossible because leadership is screwed up. Those guys make money on your failures, and it's easy to feed into that. Do not accept these academics in particular talking about how it's impossible to do just because they couldn't figure out how to do it. There are people out here who have figured out how to do it. I'm not saying it's easy, but don't buy into it's impossible, because it's easy to become a victim. Do not become a lean victim. Maybe that should have been the title of this podcast episode. Don't be a victim. Okay? Look, we put a man on the moon, right? This is not that hard when it compared to putting a man on the moon in 1969, of all things, where you've got more technology in your iPhone than you do they did in that Apollo rocket. So anyway, okay, look, I'm going to stop it here. Thanks for listening. Episode 75, Are You Set Up to Win? Find out here. And love to hear your thoughts at mark@lean911.com. Take care, guys. Bye-bye. Thank you. And stay lean. Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.